This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Another beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest, I'm telling you.
I hope everyone's staying safe out there.
Yeah, right?
Preferably working from home. It's a good day to work from home.
I wish we could do that. Welcome to Newsmakers.
It is a beautiful Willamette Valley day, no matter how you cut it. It's always a great place to live. So welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. And with
I'm Dave Bourne.
And
yeah.
There he is. Hey, we want to start the show. We've got a great guest and Representative Mike Nierman. A lot of great things to talk about and introduce this gentleman to you if you are not familiar with him. You're going to be here in a few minutes. But first of all, we would just want to give our condolences and our sorrow for the passing of Secretary of State Dennis Richardson.
Great guy.
Yes, he did a wonderful job for the campaign. He campaigned as a gentleman and a servant and led and did what he said he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a really great asset for the state. And so our condolences go out to the family. And I think all of the state should be mourning the loss of our Secretary of State, Dennis Richardson, today. Sad.
Great guy. I met him many years ago.
Great battle.
True
cancer heart. This last year and still wanted to stay on the job and serve as long as he could. It was incredible.
Yeah.
So, all right. Any rate, back to more close to home here in the Willamette Valley. We've got Mike Nierman here, representative. Welcome to the studio, Mike.
Good. Thanks, Brent.
It's
good to be. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Our audience extends out to Dallas and Polk County. We have a lot of people listening in Polk County. I want to make sure that they know everything about you and that you represent them and things like that. So you just got reelected, right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
All right. Thanks. Congratulations. It's always, how many elections have you lost in your life?
So actually in 2003, I ran for, I lived in Salem at the time. I ran for school board there. Ah. I got 28% of the vote there, which wasn't enough to carry me.
You were so close.
My platform was I wanted to sell the school district. So I don't know if that went over also.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to revisit that at another time.
Yep.
Yeah. But this is your third election into the House.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
sixth if you count primaries, and I've had an opponent in every single one of them. So I'm very much battle tested at this point.
Wow. So you had a contested primary even after you were elected in 2014.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow. 2014, 2016, or 2018.
Yep.
All right. So he knows how to win an election. And I know you're living there west of on the other side of the river.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you're district takes parts of lots of different rural areas, right?
Yes, it starts in the north. It starts just a little bit south of Newburgh there, and so Dayton is in my district, and it kind of meanders south. It's kind of a carve-out district. It doesn't have many of the larger cities in it, but it has Dayton and Amity are in my district. Dallas is in my district, Adair Village, Monroe,
really?
Jefferson. Yeah, so it has a little appendage going out into Marion County to take in Jefferson, which I'm glad to have. And then Willamina is the last city in my district, but not Sheridan.
How does Jefferson fit in there?
Yeah, it's really, if you look at a map of my district, it's a little bit of an oddity for my district there. But I think they needed a few more souls in my district, and so they just drew that in.
I think they voted to change it to prevent somebody from getting reelected is what they did.
Yeah, maybe.
We did a show, didn't we, Dave, on gerrymandering.
Yes.
We're going to get a chance to do that again in 2020 then. So
we had Kevin Mannix on with his initiative to have it taken out of the hands of the politicians and into a nonpartisan panel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm supportive of that.
Yeah, I am too.
Get the politics out of it. But anyway, here you are. That's a very interesting district. And a lot of it rural, so a lot of it skews conservative more often than not, right? Mm-hmm. So you recently reelected. Fish got 53% of the vote, and then the Democrat got 44. And
wow, that's pretty close.
Libertarians in there. 49-51 is close.
Okay.
But, you know, 55 is a pretty healthy margin. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, you really caught my attention last month. You were in the news, and I've been waiting this whole month, and we appreciate you coming during the session to talk to us about tolls. And I think we're going to talk about that and initiatives and ideas to toll I-5 and 205 to get more money from people who are using the vehicles and the roads. But you've been involved in a lot of things. your names on things that we talk about. And I see that you're sponsored by people that we at Newsmakers like to talk to, the Farm Bureau. And by the way, Dave, Farm Bureau is going to be on the show on Monday.
Ooh,
and,
that could be good.
Well, the Marion County Farm Bureau. I think you're endorsed by the State Farm Bureau. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I also have friends in the Marion County Farm Bureau, too.
Oh, good, good, good. Mm-hmm. And an NFIB, National Independent Business.
They're good
Federation.
Friends, too.
Yeah. They were on the show. So mm-hmm. we knew you were all kind of guy. So let's let the listener know who you are. So you've been in Oregon a long time. You were a software engineer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How far back does that go?
So maybe about 10 years or something like that. I've had quite a few different careers. And then late in life, I went back to school to get a degree in computer science and then became a software engineer. So
wow. Are you still working outside your...
Just very little. I do a little bit of contract work every now and then, just so that I get some honest labor and get my fingernails dirty a little bit. But
so,
yeah.
What time you work? You said you were working for Super Products, right?
Right. I used to work for that.
How far back does that go?
So let's see. I started there. I want to say probably about 2005 or something like that. So I worked there for over a decade.
One of the nice things about Oregon, I think, that is that our representatives really are our neighbors and mm-hmm. somebody you could be in a workplace with, and they're accessible, and unlike a crazy New York or a crazy California where it's just masses
with bodyguards
and masses and masses of people. They're just real people that have jobs and families that aren't that far away from you. I can see from a description I saw where you live, you're practically a neighbor of mine.
Oh, yeah.
I don't live in your district, so I can't vote for you. But you're practically a neighbor, so we'll have you down. All right, so you were in the Navy, so I want to...
No, I wasn't in the Navy.
I thought you were a veteran.
No, that's maybe Danny Jaffer, my opponent in the last election, was in the Navy. So I was never in the military.
Yeah. Well, this host has to get his homework right, I got to tell you. All right.
Okay.
So
were you checking the fake news?
Yeah. So we're going to talk here coming up with Representative Mike Nierman. We're going to talk about tolls on the highways and how he thinks that should be spent if it does come to pass, and who should have the final say and whether or not we toll, which I like
people.
That as well. Voter registration issues, single family zoning, the cap and trade we haven't seen yet, but just hot off the press, passing a bill in the House this week on rent control. A lot of things to talk about, and he's on... And most importantly for us and your representation is on Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been? This is your first time on Ways and Means, or
I've been on a Ways and Means subcommittee in every session. So a few different ones. I've kind of moved around a little bit.
That's pretty
plumb. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then you're on a subcommittee for education, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And for government.
General government. They call it the Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. It covers things like the Secretary of State, the Treasurer, the Department of Revenue, the Department of Administrative Services. So things that kind of don't fall under the normal categories of transportation and agriculture and natural resources and education, things like that. They just call it general government.
So all the spending of the legislature goes through Ways and Means.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have Representative Mike Nierman there to help at least provide a viewpoint and help try to stop things we don't like to have.
Yeah, right. Did you bring your checkbook? Because I can use a loan.
Ways and Means. All right. We're gonna take a quick break now that we've introduced the representative, and we're going to come back and talk about tolling on the highways.
I can't wait.
Really want to get your take on it, Representative Nierman.
Good.
Thanks for being here today. Hey, you're listening to Newsmakers. This is 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're talking about all sorts of bills at the legislature with Representative Mike Nierman. We're going to get around to talking about daylight savings time initiatives.
Oh, yeah.
And changing how we do that in Oregon. And the stream savers who are miners who are looking for ways to dredge out of the river some pollutants and in the same time trying to get precious metals. That's an interesting initiative. But right now, let's talk about the tolls, because I saw your name and... there's some talk about initiating tolls on highways, specifically 205 and I-5.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe toll it having to do with how much congestion there is at a time, as far as how you price that and things like that. So you think we should have some say in the matter.
Yeah. So in the 2017 session, we passed the transportation package, which kind of opened up the can of worms on tolls there. So we still have to get federal approval to do it. But they can, they're talking now. They have authority to do tolls on that. And when I'm not completely against tolls as a means of financing transportation improvements. So I'm okay with that just in general. But I think what the problem is that they're talking about tolling it as a punitive measure to say that you're getting the toll not because we need money to build roads and bridges. We're getting the toll because you shouldn't have been on I-205 at 5 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever. So, and then the problem with it is that there's no, there ends up being no dedication to the monies collected there. And so they can be used for anything. And I think we need to open up that conversation. So I'm chief petitioner on a ballot measure, vote on tolls to require a vote of the entire state of Oregon. And you have to get a majority also in the county in which the toll is imposed for any kind of toll that they want to put on existing functionality. So if they want to do new functionality, like if they build a third bridge and want to toll it, I'm at least theoretically open to that. That might or might not be a good idea. But the problem is, I think we need to go back to the people and ask them, say, do we want to toll this as a punitive thing? Turn over the money to the government and they can use it for whatever they want. And I think that's an open question.
So does it have to go to the state voters for the concept of allowing polling or for each specific and project?
Yeah, for each specific project. So for each toll instance that happens, that has to be a vote of the entire state and the county in which the toll's imposed. Wow. So we might decide differently on one toll and not on another. So yeah, so it would require that to be voted on for
so
each
what's,
instance.
What's the fear? What's the bad side of tolling 205 and the money rolling in into somebody's general fund?
So I don't know. Government has more, state government has more money than they've ever had since 1859. So I just don't think they need more money. And, you know, it's one thing, too, to say, you know, I mean, that's the idea of government is you can't afford a bridge and I can't afford a bridge. But if you pay a little bit and I pay a little bit, we can both get a bridge kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with government doing that. That's how government operates. But this is government saying, we're going to punish people for, we're not going to build them any new lanes. We're just going to punish them for using the existing infrastructure that we have and then take that money and just use it for something else, even though we don't really need the money. So it just, there's so many points of possible objection in there. where do you want me to start?
It kind of crosses the line from going transportation infrastructure and traffic engineering into social engineering.
I think so. Yeah, that's part of the problem there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, you are a software engineer. We can be rational folks. You can modify people's behavior by punishing their wallets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, hey, it couldn't have cost me $3 if I leave work now, but if I wait, and that's and cost
yeah,
me less
flexible
money.
Flexible work
forth.
Hours come into play there.
Yeah, yeah.
But the initiative really is, the crux of it is, if you're going to toll state of Oregon or whatever county, the money has to go to expanding capacity.
No, you could still toll it and you could still use the money for whatever you want. You just have to ask the people first. So, it doesn't, or you can not ask the people and you can toll some sort of new capacity. So like I said, if you build a third bridge over the river and you wanted to toll it as a method of financing it, as long as it's new capacity, you don't have to ask the people. Oh. But for something that we've already built and already paid for, I think you need to ask the people if you want to charge them twice for that.
That was my point earlier, Brent. Yeah, it's already paid for. Why are they asking to toll it?
Yeah.
Well, it's for maintenance.
No, it's not.
See,
it's punitive.
He's right.
It's punitive.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's my problem, too, is that it's already paid for, mm-hmm. and they want to toll it for you using it again to spend it somewhere else.
Theoretically,
not to expand the roads.
Your gas taxes are for maintenance,
and
so you've already paid for maintenance.
That still doesn't go to the roads maintenance.
Right, yeah, it doesn't. So I'll tell you, we have a $90 million software project right now going on in the DMV that's being paid for by gas tax dollars. So so you're right. Your gas tax doesn't always go to roads either. So
Wow, that sounds like a little bit of a switch on a constitutionally dedicated tax,
right?
if you read the Constitution, the Oregon Constitution says that the gas tax can go to administrative functions, and they have determined that the software project is an administrative function.
$90 million.
Yeah. So you could almost build the Newburgh Dundee bypass for that.
Yes.
Well, back then, I still remember the mid-90s when we had a DMV project, ODOT project. It was a software project. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of my very best friends ended up in charge of that project. So I heard a lot about it. He didn't work for the state. He worked for the consultant.
Oh, okay.
And then I'm trying to get the numbers right, but it was like a $60 million project that had ballooned to $120 million.
And it's amazing how that happens.
This was under the austere leadership of John Kitzhaber. Mm-hmm. And my friend was just, I'm going to get somebody in trouble here. He was describing how at the time there was such little leadership that he was reporting to an interim person at ODOT who reported to an interim person who reported interim person who reported to the governor. And everyone, nobody had a job and nobody was making decisions, and this thing just spiraled out of control.
Wow.
And we ended up not getting for our money what we should have gotten.
Anyway. So we're working on that same software project today, or the rebirth of that one today.
Ridiculous. Yeah. It should have just said, hey, build us the best system in the country and let the software engineer do it. Anyway, okay, so I kind of like the idea, and we're talking to Representative Mike Nierman from Polk County and parts of Yamhill County, right?
And parts of Benton County and parts of Marion County.
Unbelievable.
Too. Yeah.
A lot of places to campaign about tolling. I like the idea of saying if you're going to toll, it has to go to new capacity.
Yes.
Or at least maintenance of the road that you're doing. Maybe you need more lanes, or maybe you need a newer bridge. You need some seismic upgrades, mm-hmm. something, yeah. other than just taking the money and sucking it away to go to PERS.
Yep. And can I...
Because theoretically, a toll could go to PERS.
They
right?
could, or the Metro Christmas Party or whatever. So can I get my website out for this?
Oh, yeah, please.
So it's www.voteontolls.com. And if you go there, you can download one of the e-petitions and print it out and sign it and mail it back to me, and it will count.
All right, we need to do that.
Not the last time we're going to talk about that. VoteOnTolls.com.
Yeah. VoteOnTolls.com.
And so you're in the signature gathering phase.
Right.
And so people can sign the petition and send it back.
Yep.
They can sign the petition and have everybody who's registered to vote in their household sign the petition.
And their neighbors.
Yeah. And their neighbors. Fill that sucker out and get it right back.
So let's clarify the areas that they want to toll. You're talking about 205 where?
So they're not really clear where they're going to do it right now, so they're still trying to decide. But part of the issue of 205 is they want to get the traffic cut down on that, so they need to do that and I-5. So it doesn't really matter exactly where they do it.
Uh-huh.
They need to do it probably somewhere west of the Abernathy Bridge on I-205 and probably south of the Terwilliger Curves on I-5. But I'm not really a traffic guy, mm-hmm. so I don't know. But
I do know on I-5, they're talking about North Portland area up to the Interstate Bridge, mm-hmm. where they need more lanes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the other area that you're talking about in 205, it has room to expand.
Yes, it does.
To three, to even four lanes.
Oh, probably each way. Probably eight lanes each way.
They did expand that.
Yep.
And it improved the traffic.
Yep.
But not enough.
Yeah, we have huge right-of-ways there, so that there's really no land acquisition costs for that I-205 stretch.
But I-5
there.
Would be a problem through North Portland.
Yeah, or even south through Terwilliger or something like that.
Yeah.
There's some geographic impediments to doing that.
Like a mountain.
Yeah, right, yeah. So, yeah.
All right, let's, before we break, because it's hot off the press news, we've got... the bill passed on rent control in Oregon.
Did, yeah.
How many states have statewide rent control?
I think that would be zero.
That would be...
or almost one. Let's
soon
say.
To be one.
Yeah.
Okay, but Oregon knows better than the rest of the country.
So that's on its way to the governor for her signature.
So be clear for the listener, your vote was?
So I voted no on that. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be bad in a couple of ways. So the actual rent control part of it is going to reduce the supply, which I think ultimately will drive rents up, or at least the quality of properties available will drive the quality down on that. Mm-hmm. And then another part of that bill is the they call it no cause eviction. I'm putting that in the air quotes here because there is no such thing as a no cause eviction. Landlords don't make money by evicting their tenants. They're well paying, good tenants. So what that's going to do is that's going to cause landlords to evict people for cause, which means that then the tenant will have a stain on their record. So whereas right now you can say, look, you don't pay your rent on time and the cops get called on you and there's rumors of drug activity and I'm going to keep your security deposit and you just go away. And you can mm-hmm. do that kind of arrangement. And that may sound harsh, but that doesn't leave a record, a blemish on the person's record.
Well, it's hard enough to get a rental
in
many parts of the state and mm-hmm. certainly the Mid-Valley.
Yep.
And to have an eviction on your record and trying to get somebody else to rent you lodging.
Yeah.
That'd be really tough.
Even the Justice Department says that they expect for-cause evictions, legal evictions, to increase under this bill, after this bill.
So of all the tools that the legislature could have used to create more housing and to create more supply and to have some control, some positive control about driving down rents, this is not the right tool.
No, it's not. And, you know, it's amazing. So I used to be on the Ways and Means Subcommittee that oversaw the budget that goes to the Housing and Community Services Agency. And they bond hundreds of millions of dollars every biennium to build affordable housing. And they don't even make a blip on the graph. If you look at the number of units, the only way to get more housing, to get the supply issue, is to have the private sector do it. And so anything that could incentivize the private sector is what needs to be done. I think some of that could just be the state getting out of the way. So things like system development fees being waived for more affordable properties.
City of Salem just did that.
Yeah, good, good.
Just passed that.
I didn't know that, so that's mm-hmm. good. That's good news. And so that's something that can be done. And the state could maybe put a carrot in front of the cities to help them to do that. And then the other thing is just there's some land use laws that maybe need to be relaxed a little bit. And we don't want to build condominiums on the rim of Crater Lake or anything like that. But we need to maybe relax some of these laws where there's not actual farmland that's being called farmland. As I see around Bend, which is a super huge growing community there, and they have some land tied up that doesn't need to be tied up that could be put into that, and that would support availability.
We do have a personality conflict regarding our land use, because nobody hates trees as much as the tree extremists want to. People, nobody hates trees. People
right.
like to have trees in their
yeah.
yard. They like to have them in their neighborhood. They like to have them in their parks. But anyway, we want to protect our canopy, and we also want to protect our farmland.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge economic driver. We absolutely have to yep. protect this economic sector and our farms. But then what are we going to do about not having available land for housing?
Yep.
Right. And
yep.
so I did hear the speaker talk to a local group, and the subject came up, and I said, well, what about, as you were alluding to, relaxing some of the requirements on the urban growth boundary so it is not a 10-year process, so that it's easier to, once you expand urban growth maybe into some unproductive farm area or things that are not farmable, like hills. I got to have to take that back, because all the wine people will be emailing
me. Non-south-facing hills.
Yeah. So, but if it were not such an involved and lengthy process to expand our urban growth boundary, you'd have more supply of land
yeah.
and people can build those apartments.
It's a little tricky. We have kind of a little bit of a conundrum in the Willamette Valley, if we have some of the most fertile farmland on the face of planet Earth here, yet that's the place where people want to go and build houses and live and everything. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have a little bit of a conflict there. So I realize that this isn't an easy problem to solve, but there's some things that we could do to increase the supply
yeah,
by the private sector.
Yeah, and there's hills on both sides.
Yeah.
So put your houses there.
That's a definition of a valley.
There's only so many things we can do to increase density here in the valley, because yeah. we're never going to be a Portland. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about daylight savings time. We're going to talk about mining our streams and doing environmental benefit at the same time, and maybe some zoning issues. So we're talking to Representative Mike Nierman here on Newsmakers. It's 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. He's fired up today.
Anytime
you talk about gas taxes and polling on roads.
It's tolling, not polling.
Oh, yeah. That's a completely different thing, isn't it?
It is.
It's polling about tolling, though,
yes,
right? Yes,
that's right. You yeah. need to poll, and people need to go to the toll. At any rate. All right.
Yeah.
I'll try to get my consonants straight. Anyway, Representative Mike Nierman is with us today to talk about what's going on at the legislature. He sits on the Joint Committee, Ways and Means Committee, and a couple subcommittees. committees. And as promised, we're going to talk about the Daylight Savings Time Initiative. We had Senator Thatcher on, actually, before the session and talked about this and thought that Oregon could go on permanent daylight savings time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're supportive of that.
Yes, I'm a co-sponsor with her on that. And I think there's a hearing. That bill did get a hearing, I think, from, don't quote me on the date, March 8th. You might want to look up the bill yourself. But I'm going to be testifying in favor of that bill. And I'm excited about that. That's a good thing. So the idea is that we don't do the change. So daylight savings time is not bad. It's just the change twice a year that's kind of hard on people. So we're looking forward to that.
Well, we would spring forward like we're going to do in a couple of weeks here.
And we would stay there.
We would never fall back.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So just stay the same. So in the fall, we would not fall back.
Yeah.
Just stay on daylight savings time. Yep. We'd be the only state, though, that does that.
I think Arizona has that, and in parts of Indiana.
Yeah.
That's backwards. Arizona does not observe daylight savings time at all.
No, no.
There's a big difference.
Yeah, they're on standard time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Hawaii is on standard time.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. So at least there would be similar to us is that they wouldn't be flipping back and forth all the time there. So that's the real gain there. So not so much what exactly time they are. It's not having to flip back and forth.
Whatever. Yeah, so we would always be an hour ahead of Arizona.
Which is fine with me.
Except for the Navajo Nation. Mm-hmm. They do. Believe it or not, that's yet another exception to every rule. Navajo Nation in Arizona, they observe daylight savings time, but the rest of the state does not.
Mm. Okay.
Okay. All right. So, and what is the thought behind it as far as how are we all going to benefit in Oregon from the daylight savings time going year round?
From personal experience, just the change itself is just kind of tough for people to handle. I'm like that. And I hear people complain about it all the time about, daylight savings time, we're losing an hour or we're gaining an hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's just personally hard to deal with there. And a lot of devices are smart now and they set their own time or whatever, but you have clocks and stuff you have to go reset and clock on the stove is wrong and all that. So it's just something that it's an unnecessary thing that we don't have to deal with. So
how much traction do you think the bill will get?
I don't know. It's getting a hearing. So that tells me that whoever's the committee chair is thinking that it's going to move. So that's a good sign.
Wow.
So,
yeah. I mean, a lot of bills don't get hearings.
That's
right.
True.
Right. A lot of bills.
They just get stuck and never land.
Yep.
Especially, I guess, this session, if it is submitted by a Republican.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Is it tough being a Republican in the legislature this year?
It is, but that's, elections have consequences. So you just smile and show up and do your part. And that means a lot of pushing the no button. But, the effort is up to me and the results are up to God. So we'll just use that as our little sanity piece there.
And the voter.
Right.
Yep. And the statewide voters that decide that ratio.
Yep.
So in October, here we are. And however dark it is at 6 currently, then we make it that dark at 5 when we fall back.
Yep.
So that's the part that gets depressing going into the seasonal change so early.
Yep.
I know it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I know that I will tell you, I've been in the insurance business now for a number of years. And it's kind of funny side bit, but the Northwest has an extraordinary amount of prescriptions for seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah.
And I was talking to an underwriter. This is an insurance guy who tries to determine risk. I'm like, well, this client, they're on antidepressants. I'm like, dude, in February, everyone's on antidepressants, right? Like, a third of my clients are on anti-anxiety, antidepressants because it is the days are so short and so dark, during the winter. So hopefully it'll stay under this proposal. If the bill passes and the governor will sign it, then that would be a permanent daylight savings time and a little bit more light into the fall going into the winter.
Yep.
Yeah. Right? All right. Well, we'll have to see how that goes. We'll monitor that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I want to switch a little bit because this one is really interesting to me. It's the numbers, House Bills 2737. So if the listener wants to find a way to track that. But it has to do with people who are really in the business of mining streams and having trouble getting permission to do so and running into environmental roadblocks and things like that, kind of flipping their position and saying, why don't we use the equipment? Because they've invested in the equipment for like kind of a suction dredge, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To pull pollutants and trash out of the streams.
Yep. So they've been shut down. So that, I think a couple of sessions ago, we passed a bill that makes suction dredge mining illegal, or mostly illegal, in the state. And so what these are, it's a little device that it's like two pontoons and a lawnmower engine hooked up to a little suction pump there. And they go, they got a hose, they go down there and they suck the gravel off of the bed there and run it through a sluice and look for valuable minerals in there. And mostly what they find is fishing lures and fishing weights and things, which is good because then they take those out of the river. And so they're looking for a way to maybe do some of this work to take care of streams. Lead is not a healthy thing for the environment, you know, in large concentrations. So so I think that's a good thing. So I was chief sponsor for that bill at the request of one of my constituents. So I'm happy to do that. So I think it's a good thing.
Are you getting some bipartisan support, or is this a partisan issue?
I think it's going to end up being a little bit partisan. So we did get a hearing on a different bill that's kind of related to this, but I think there's some of the environmentalist groups are opposing it. So they're pretty. Well, I think it's part of just, and you're asking me to speak for my opposition, which is a little bit difficult.
Sorry.
But no, that's fine. I can fake that. But
kind of stupid argument do they have, Representative?
No.
That's not what I said.
I think part of it is that this is a mountain stream, and they want to leave it pristine and things like that. And they're worried that any kind of human activity in there could cause trouble. But I think that what's been shown is to have the human activity in there it fluffs up the gravel there, so it makes it actually better for fish spawning habitat there.
Right.
And they're limited during the times of year that they can actually do that suction dredge mining, so that it's not interfering. They're not sucking up the baby salmon or the eggs or anything like that. So I think it's kind of a win-win situation of the miners get to pull the fishing weights out of the stream, and by the way, if they find a little nugget of gold, they get to keep it or whatever.
And then
the stream gets cleaned up and the gravel gets cleaned up, and everybody's a winner there. So
why don't you just let them do it in the Willamette? I mean, that needs a lot of cleaning.
There you go. Right. I don't know how much gold there is in the Willamette.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot.
Maybe
we're talking to Representative Mike Nierman here on Newsmakers, House Bill 2737, and I could dive into this for the whole hour because there have to be arguments on both sides, and somewhere there's the truth, and sometimes there's just kind of a difference of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I could definitely see how the activity could help clean a stream bed.
Mm-hmm.
I could definitely see how it could create a cleaner and fewer kind of pollutants and on the other hand, you've got Oregon has a lot of outdoors people.
Mm-hmm.
We're outdoors people, mm-hmm. and hunters and fishers and fishermen and
who all want clean streams.
We all mm-hmm. want clean streams, right?
But somebody has to do it.
Yeah, and well, if it is bad for the fish,
right?
If it does create turbidity, and you take some of these pollutants and you let them out in the stream, and it's not as pristine, and it's bad for the fish, then there's an argument to be had.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know, but it seems like it's exactly the kind of topic that people on both sides of the aisle should not make up their minds based on their party without getting informed.
Yeah,
that drives me crazy.
That's a great point, Brent.
Right?
Get the facts.
There should be environmentalists arguing on both sides of this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You should be, I'm an environmentalist, and hey, let's get these heavy metals out of the streams.
Right.
I'm an environmentalist. Hey, let's improve the spawning grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, I'm an environmentalist, and this will disrupt and harm more than it will do good. And mm-hmm. let's balance that.
Yep. But like Representative said, they're restricted at what time they can do it, or what time of the year they can do it, because the fish spawn at certain times of the year.
Yeah.
You can't be in there.
Yeah, and the whole subject is very interesting to me. I would love to see the Willamette more navigable, deeper.
Yeah,
deeper. From Albany, because I live in the Mid Valley. So Albany to, Newburgh or something would be great, and it would require dredging.
Right.
So the question is, will it do more damage in the interim than it gains? Because
mm-hmm.
we know that cooler waters are good for fish. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you take out, maybe you can take out some of the sediment that is old and is trash and is polluted and has all these, or is it going to stir up things that better off left alone?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Ooh, that's a good argument.
Yeah. So I think the Willamette's not really spawning ground, just when you
true.
Think of just the Willamette going
garbage.
Through Salem.
Yeah.
And we're but already the, not eating yeah. the fish. If we catch it out of the right. Willamette, most of you are.
So, let alone swimming yeah. in it.
So, and then when you talk about dredging the Willamette, that's maybe like a little bit of a bridge too far. We maybe won't poke the bear there. But
well, I'm just as an example for a second. Is it good for the fish? Is it bad for the fish?
They do dredge
is it a net positive
the Columbia and the Willamette up in Portland to for the boat traffic.
For
so,
shipping lanes,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Hey, we're talking to Representative Mike Nierman. He's going to stick with us for the rest of the hour. We're going to take a quick break here and come back and finish the hour. And be sure to take a look at his website, by the way, voteontolls.com.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Voteontolls.com. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers. This is 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne in our studio today. Representative Mike Nierman from the 23rd District, recently reelected. Elected now for the third time to represent people from Dallas and Jefferson and Dayton and kind of a little bit all over the place, a lot of rural Oregonians. And if you want to share this, by the way, this will go up on the KYKN website. There will be a podcast. And if you want to share it with
subscribe
friends and neighbors or anybody who wants to should hear what the representative is talking about, please do that. If you missed any other shows, you can find it at the KYKN website. Look for Newsmakers and the podcast. So many things going on at the Capitol that kind of frighten me. One of them is the cap and trade. We've talked a little bit about it on Newsmakers. What's going on with that effort now? It's not bubbling up to the surface yet for the general floor, right?
No, we kind of we talked them into having kind of a roadshow where we go through to different cities throughout the state and have a kind of town hall conversations with voters about what they want to say back to their legislature about that. So that's going on right now when hearings don't get snowed out or whatever. So that's a big deal going on right now.
So are they going to listen to the parts of the state that are not their metro area?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the idea is to get out. So they had one in, it was in Southern Oregon. I think it was in Grants Pass. And the next one's supposed to be in Bend. And so they're getting out to kind of the rural parts of the state, the non-Portland, non-Willamette Valley parts of the state. So,
why am I cynical enough to think that they could hear a heck no from the entire rest of the state and still proceed?
You know, and at the end of the day, you might be right about that. But I have to say that what I've heard back, and I haven't been to one of these, is that, you know, the one in Southern Oregon, they had a venue that would hold 70 people, and they had to move to a different venue that was hold 300 people, and then they had to turn people away, whatever, and have people showing up in yellow vests and making a little bit of a ruckus and all that. So I think that the point is getting made, and there will be some people that won't get the point, but legislators are on a continuum and what they think of this issue, and so somewhere someone will be affected by this. So,
and you know, elections have consequences, mm-hmm. and decisions made at the Capitol have consequences. So, if you're going to vote to create an all new government entity monster that's going to raise people's natural gas bills to heat their home and their gas and the gasoline bills to drive their vehicles.
Let me interrupt you for a second, because part of the bill says is and I forget the exact language that they use, but they say they're going to transform the economy of the state of Oregon. And so what we're really talking about is we're talking about rolling back the Industrial Revolution, and they want to replace that with a green economy. And I don't know what at the end of the day what that looks like is. The guy who used to be a truck driver doesn't drive a truck anymore. He installs solar panels. I don't know how he got the solar panels out to the site or whatever. But
horse and buggy.
Yeah, maybe. But really, it's a very ambitious thing. The other thing that's bad about it is it really concentrates the power into the person who's the head of the climate department or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're going to rename the energy department or whatever to the Department of Climate or something like that. And whoever's the unelected bureaucrat of that is going to be the guy who's dictating the economy of the state of Oregon. And I just think at the end of the day, that's a really bad idea. So this isn't just like, oh, more taxes or, you know, oh, stupid taxes or something like that. This is a transformation of Oregon's economy. And I think that's pretty dangerous.
Well, you said some powerful things there.
Yeah.
One, I like really bad idea and roll back the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, that's what it really is, effectively. Yeah.
I one of my favorite bumper stickers ever, and I don't know what stuck with me and always will stick with me, in the back of this truck it said, if you bought it, a truck brought it.
Yep.
So there's no way you're going to buy anything that a truck and a vehicle did not bring to where you purchased it.
I think the country of Spain had a similar kind of thing where they were going to make their economy the green economy, and they were pretty similarly ambitious thing. They said, oh, we're going to have, for every old job, we're going to have 5 green jobs or whatever. It was the opposite. For every green job they created, they ended up losing 5 regular jobs, and it really caused a lot of problems. They had to kind of take a step back from that. So I think we'll have kind of a similar experience here in Oregon. So
you're concerned about a bureaucracy that's going to have their fingers on a huge pile of money and making public policy without it even being filtered through elected leadership. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Not so much have their fingers on a huge pile of money, but directing economic decisions in the economy. So that's going to be pretty pernicious to say you can't do this kind of economic activity because it's not green enough. You need to engage in something more green. If you do, we're going to penalize you, and then government gets larger from that. So it's going to be a bad thing.
That comes down to what we were talking about, Brent, before. It's not the government's job, right? It's their job is for our safety and water and sewer and schools.
Yeah.
Stay out of the rest of my life.
And it's amazing how most of the countries on the face of planet Earth that are the cleanest countries, I would hold up my country as a fairly clean country,
right,
are market-based economies. And the ones that are the polluters, whatever, are the kind of socialist, kind of less market-based economies. So the market produces wealth, which then can be directed back into whatever we want to put it on, and having a clean economy is what can do that. But you have to have the market-based economy first.
Yeah, right. That's just crazy talk.
Yeah.
I do recall, because sometimes you're going to shoot yourself in the foot by having too far a reach.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I remember they wanted to change, and they have been changing what happens at the Boardman power plant.
Yeah.
And they wanted to reduce the lifetime of it for this coal-fired plant. It's the only one in the state of Oregon. Mm-hmm. It's one of the newest ones in Oregon, in the United States. It's one of the cleanest ones in the United States. And meanwhile, in the Southeast, there's all these old plants that are very, very pollutant and blah, blah, blah. And Oregon has one plant, and it's modern, and it's pretty
clean.
But they want to shut it down. Mm-hmm. And if I were PG&E, of course, it's hard for PG&E because they're regulated and such. But if I were PG&E, they want to be agreeable to the powers that be, but I'm feisty. So I would have said, oh, we'll be happy to shut down Portland. How would you like us to manage the rolling brownouts in Portland?
Right.
Yeah. Right? Shut down Boardman. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Shut down Boardman, but it's going to be rolling brownouts.
Because in Portland.
Yeah. People, we power people's lives here.
And the utilities tend to be ones that aren't fighting it because they're guaranteed an income. They're a regulated monopoly, and the Public Utility Commission will guarantee them rates that will ensure a profit. So.
All right. We've only got a minute left. I have a few more topics I would love to tackle with the representative.
Next time.
We've been talking to Representative Mike Nierman of the 23rd District, his third go-around in this session, his third term, two-year term.
Mm-hmm.
We got about 20 seconds. What should the public be watching for? What's happening in the Capitol? There's cap and trade. Anything else that you're like, holy cow, this is going to happen. Everybody should be aware.
Yep. So the taxes are coming. They're going to try and keep the kicker. They're going to try to roll back measures 5 and measure 50. Those are your property tax caps and limitations on growth there. So watch for that. Those haven't moved yet, but that's going to be a big deal.
Yes. All right. We're going to have you back. Would you come
and
back?
And then gun stuff.
Gun stuff. No, other than that, other than your property tax and your guns and your income taxes, there's nothing going on to be afraid of.
Oh, no. That one, the tolls. Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking time out of the session. I know it's a very busy time for you. Thanks for being here on Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Morin on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.